Sports.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this start of another weekend. And the weekend leading up to a big week next week. There's so much going on in Atlanta. Of course, you've got the Major League All-Star Game and all the festivities around that, the Home Run Derby, the Futures Game. The Major League Draft gets underway on Sunday. And then, of course, SEC Media Days. 4 days, Monday through Thursday, with four teams a day.
I saw a draft updated today. I think it was CBS who updated a mock draft earlier today. And how about Ike Irish, third overall to the Seattle Mariners
wow.
in the projected
wow,
draft.
I had not seen him that high.
Today, they thought that Ike Irish could be, if they had to pick one player on the board who's going to go earlier than the mock drafts have expected that player to go, they think it could be Ike Irish because of position scarcity and,
right.
and also like the fact that bat, I mean, it plays all over the field, but the fact that guy could maybe catch,
mm-hmm.
like it makes him a and the thought that he's a third year college player as opposed to a toolsy high schooler.
Yeah, he's proven a lot more.
I mean, I think Ike Irish would probably I would expect. How about here's a prediction, Bill? I'd like to know your number on this one too. They usually update the prospect list. Top prospects in baseball
right.
after the draft, and they add the players who have been taken in the draft. I would think Ike Irish is probably going to be somewhere between 50 and 75 immediately, maybe.
Well,
if
he is taken number three, he'll be higher than that.
Expect, okay.
He'll be a top 100 prospect.
Oh, I think so,
he'll
for sure. And I wouldn't be shocked if he was top 50, like you know,
right.
in the updated rankings. And
It sort of depends on what team he winds up with and where he goes, actually.
You think that would impact his ranking?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, because sometimes they'll look at teams and go, well, he's got quite a few players to jump over before he'd be able to hit the big time.
I just wonder how much hay is in the barn as far as like evaluators deciding where these guys slot in.
Yeah,
I
would hope that they have a pretty good idea who they want to have. I would think that if everybody doesn't have like your top 50 in order
sure.
right now, so in case somebody gets overlooked, you take, you know,
and even,
unless you have just a glaring need, you take the best player.
And even like websites that rank prospects and stuff, I think they've got a pretty good idea of where they're going to slot the top picks in the draft into their top 50 or top 100. The thought that Ike Irish could be, and the reason I bring this up is as a third-year college player, he's probably closer to the pros no matter where he ends up than a really exciting high
oh, yeah.
school senior.
Oh, no doubt about that.
And if you're picking at the top of the draft, you need help now because your team's not very good. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
they have a lottery system, so it's not like it's straight 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the worst records, but it's still, you know, the best teams aren't picking really early in the Major League Baseball draft, the teams that need help right now. And that's another reason why I think a player like Ike Irish could be really attractive. Maybe he helps you soon, if he can help you.
No, it will be interesting. There's been some talk, and it's still, you're absolutely right. The best teams aren't picking high in the Major League draft because Major League Baseball has not ever allowed draft picks to be traded. They can be traded after they have been property of a team for a certain amount of time.
Famously, and I think that's to save teams from themselves.
Yes.
Like you want to make teams, and if they want to trade the guys after they've drafted them and brought them into the organization, they can include them as, you know, players to be named later and things like
mm-hmm.
that. Famously, Dansby Swanson was taken first overall, and I want to say there was a change of administration, right, in Arizona
with the Diamondbacks
between when he was drafted, or maybe it was just the people that drafted him lost faith in him. But they traded him 6 months after taking
him. Not like he had a bad debut in professional baseball.
No, they didn't like his haircut or something, and they went Steinbrenner, and they 6 months after taking him first overall.
Right.
They traded him in a deal that was
about as soon as they could.
And it was pretty universally panned as far as their return from the first overall
that
pick.
Shelby Miller?
That was the Shelby Miller trade. I think they gave up Inciarte too. So it was like you gave up a guy who played a lot and was helpful defensively and Dansby and got sort of a middling return. So I mean, I think that no, but you're right. You can't trade You cannot trade.
No, now there's been some talk about doing that. There's been some talk. Now that the one thing that can be first round picks can't be traded, spots can't be traded. I believe the compensatory picks, the bonus picks, I think they can.
You just don't hear. I mean, you hear about draft considerations sometimes, right, and cash considerations. You don't hear as much about picks being included in trades in Major League Baseball.
Well, it's because, I mean, even though you're seeing players make it to the majors quicker, with multiple players from the prior year's draft making the majors, it's not like the NFL where there is no minor leagues, or the NBA where draft picks are, you know, the high draft picks are expected to be able to help you right now. And Paul Skeens is probably the closest thing there's been to a guy that coming out of college could immediately actually help a team.
I sort of understand why you're not allowed as a general manager in Major League Baseball to trade away, like, your future draft to help this team, because it could end up being like a real, you know, I think the baseball's kind of saving you from yourself in that situation, on the off chance that it's, you know, it hurts you. Like, if you miss out on this trade and you don't have draft options later, it could be a pretty long winter for your team. Draft week or draft day trades would be really interesting as far as not future drafts, but this draft, because if you wanted to, like, suppose there was a player in the first round that you liked and
you really liked him, and a team one spot or two ahead of you drafted him, it would be great if you could work something out, give them draft considerations and, you know, something.
Yeah, I would say I'm still queasy about the idea of future draft considerations being included in trades like that. But I think if you wanted to deal with, you know, if you wanted to treat like a poker game, if you wanted to treat your picks in this year's draft like poker chips and you know, figure out a way, or baseball cards, and figure out a way to trade for a better one, I'm okay with sort of that. But, you know, sort of getting back to how we started here, Ike Irish is looking like he's going to be a very hot commodity.
Yeah, I'll be very, very surprised if his name's not called. And before the midpoint of day one.
But seeing him at three.
Midpoint of round one.
Seeing him at three in the CBS in the pick is a super bold pick. And that's, that'd be huge for Ike. And by the way, a recent early selection in the Major League Baseball draft from Auburn got some pretty huge news today. Do you know what I'm alluding to, Bill? Casey Mize is an all-star for the AL.
Well, good for him. I did not see that.
Casey Mize was named as a replacement to the American League all-star
team
this
that?
Year. So, former first overall pick of the Tigers. How about they've got a real shot of they're going to be a tough out. They're going to
if everyone's healthy, they're really good.
Like, they're going to be a real tough out, and Casey's part of that, and he's going to be in Atlanta next week for the all-star game. So very cool, and I'm sure quite a few Auburn people will be in attendance at the All-Star game, including Justin Ferguson, and we'll get to see Casey in action on Tuesday night. I don't know if they'll use him. You know, the rules are
usually they'll save a pitcher or two just in case. But usually that's about the only players that don't get used usually are a pitcher perhaps on each team.
Aren't there going to be a bunch of replacements from the pitchers who go Sunday?
Yes.
Like, aren't there still going to be? So this is before that, even, right. I believe. So there's going to be another wave of.
Yeah, this weekend there will be more. There'll probably be a pitcher who go on Saturday that'll say, nah, I don't think I can go.
Yeah, and I know some people like a more exclusive All-Star game, and they get queasy about 50 All-Stars between the players and the replacements and things. And I still think it's a cool thing. And obviously the guys are having a good time. So
it's great for the guys, especially who are making it the first time.
Yeah, and it's should be a good time. Both the Home Run Derby on Monday night and the All-Star game on Tuesday night, which we'll have right here on ESPN 106.7.
Both be on ESPN 106.7 each day, Monday and Tuesday, following the 7 hours of live coverage from SEC Media Days.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. We're gonna have big days next week between the 7 straight hours of Media Days coverage, starting with the Max Roundtable, and then Jacob and Christian with On the Line, and then our show wrapping things up for the day. We're just going to have 4 days of extensive coverage, and then, like you said, Monday and Tuesday, throwing it to Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game, ESPN Radio's coverage of both of those events live from Truist in Atlanta.
And speaking of football, we're thrilled that Coach Don Dunn back with us here in the studio today. Don, how you doing?
Doing great.
How was the vacay in Florida?
It was great. It was very hot, but it was a wonderful time. Got to see my son for a whole week and his lovely wife, and ate too much.
Now you were talking about the trip you made. It's a little longer trip for Jonathan.
Yeah, but he flew.
Well, I would sure hope so, from Minnesota.
Yeah, he's not like his dad. He's smarter. I would have probably driven. But anyway, it was 9 hours for us. We go down to Sanibel Captiva below Fort Myers. But it was nice. Still some damage, like we were talking, from the storms. They got a ways to go. But it was fun to see some old college buddies and their families. And we've been doing it for a long time. But it's good to be back. And like we were talking before I left, whenever July the 4th hit, when we came back, it was time to go.
I feel like football. There should be some steel drums playing underneath you while you're talking
everything
about us,
Coach. Changes.
Oh, absolutely. Put the lime in the coconut last week, Coach. I love to hear it. Great to have you back. You know, with Media Days next week, you had your share of guys who were picked from your defensive line room to go be part of the car wash, you know, be one of the three representatives from Auburn. Do you ever remember giving advice or recommending any sort of approach to these guys? Because for some of them, it's going to be, especially in that big room.
Yeah.
If you've never been
very intimidating.
Yeah, not to be all Grandpa Simpson, but if you've never if you've never been inside that room, right? Like if you haven't been in there, it can be from the stage. That could be a pretty daunting thing for folks who aren't always.
Did Jackson Arnold go last year for Oklahoma?
Yes, he did.
I believe Jackson he did. All right. And then I mean, so Auburn has two players who have been there, even though they don't have a senior.
Yeah.
Two of their three.
Yeah.
Have been to SEC Media Days before.
And Hugh Freeze had the option of taking seniors from that room, right? You have Dylan and you have Jeremiah and you have Tutal who have been in the program for 3 years each, and you also recruited a couple of senior tackles that people is Mason a senior? You recruited a couple of senior tackles. You had seniors. To me, the fact that you're going with Connor, the center, and the guy who is, you know, he's played as much as any of them,
right? And well, he's the play caller on the offensive line. So I mean, he's the captain, really, if you will, of that offensive line. So that makes sense. I mean, they've got leaders. That's one thing that Hugh Freeze is taking with him. He's got three leaders. He's got his quarterback, he's got his center, and he's got Keldrick Falk. I mean,
yeah, you know, back to your question, Dan, I never really met with him about that. I thought our sports information people did a great job. Coach Tuberville did a great job. You don't just pick
that. Kirk, was that Kirk even then? Yeah, Kirk and the gang back then? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kirk does a great job of pairing the guys.
I didn't have much.
Remember that next time I asked for credentials.
Yeah. I didn't have any say on who got picked or who didn't. You have to be very careful, though, I think, because there is some jealousy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
sure.
And you got to, you know, when you don't take any seniors, I don't know.
How about this? I won't name names because out of privacy, because this was a personal conversation. I saw a student athlete who thought he was going to be picked for Media Days in the last 4 years or so that this occurred in a sport where he thought he was going to be selected and he found out he wasn't within the last 48 hours of me bumping into him.
Right.
And he was very upset
and
saying reckless things about it. So I was like, okay, this can be an important thing for some guys. And it can also be.
I mean, it's a great way to, I mean, if you're a solid player, it's a way to get your name out there, and you're going to get some all-conference recognition.
And I wonder if this is still true, but you probably encountered this too. It can also be a daunting thing that some guys are not necessarily interested in doing. Some guys are not playing football so that they get to sit at a podium.
Yeah, I'm sure there's been guys that say thank you, but no thanks.
Yeah,
you know, like you said, they're just intimidated in front of a crowd, not great speakers. and it can be embarrassing and humiliating.
Maybe there's more pressure to do it now because you have sponsors and you have apparel brand who wants you to.
Yeah. Like
the fellow who gives you the suit now probably gives you a couple $100 and tells you to say his
name.
In
the pockets.
Yeah.
That was the old days. I'm sorry.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, meet the old boss.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up a little bit later when we have time.
Oh, we will definitely get to that.
Crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I've been gone.
We'll get into that. We're wide open, though. We'd love for you to join us. It's clouding up here. Looks like we're going to get our typical afternoon storm shower, at least here, somewhere. Looks like we're going to be part of it today, though. All right. But we'd love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Bill, Dan, and Don, Drew at the controls, come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise here on this Friday?
Do you want to try Barrett? That's the Braves are in San Francisco, I believe.
Oh, let's try.
So we might try our buddy up at Braves Radio. But Media Day's legend. SEC Media Day's legend, Barrett Salee. So we'll see if we can get him because it's
Have you got his number, Drew?
It's always a blast to catch up with him when we can. And it's
talk for a second. I will text him and warn him that we're gonna
ambushing him with the studio line on the air. I love it, Gorilla Radio. Even though Auburn only plays two of the seven teams on the first 2 days, other than Auburn, that are going next week, like there's no shortage of storylines within the league, and I feel like there are a lot of teams that feel pretty good either about their situation now or if things break right, where they could be a year from now. Now there's exceptions, but I mean you think about, I guess the best case scenario here would be Florida. Florida is. Florida was solidly in the bottom half of the SEC this time last year as far as projected order of finish. I think that it was tough to find any optimism around the program, aside from the fact that DJ Lagway might be a really exciting talent. But even then,
did we know that much about him last year? In the preseason?
I think the folks that were excited about him thought that it was going to be they didn't think they were going to see it in 2024. And for things to have gone, between the breakthroughs on defense and landing some of the players he landed, recruiting, changing course, and Lagway breaking through, I mean, we think Florida could be fifth or sixth. Could be the case. As far as projected order of finish, a huge leap in just 1 year, largely quarterback related. South Carolina's a similar deal.
Absolutely.
South Carolina's probably a more vivid example because folks thought they were, dead and buried. And Beamer was in a lot of trouble going into last year, largely because it was unproven at the quarterback position. Sellers has that huge season. They hang on to him, which is maybe the recruiting job of the offseason.
Well, you talk about front-loading and doing everything you can to reinvest in your players and retain them. That's exactly what South Carolina did. Because remember last year at this time, we thought Graham Mertz was the Gators quarterback, and Lagway was just a guy that, has got some potential that you didn't know how much you'd see.
And I think folks thought Robbie might beat out
Lenore
Sellers.
There were a good bit of talk about that.
At South Carolina. So, I mean, no, you're right. Things can change, very quickly. I guess, football being a contact sport probably has something to do with that as far as sudden shakeups in the, in the two deep at the quarterback position. But, no, I think that, it was existential for Shane Beamer to keep Lenoris Sellers.
Oh, yes.
Because if Lenoris Sellers leaves and South Carolina doesn't replace him with an impact player and they go 4-8 or 5-7, I wonder how secure, after the season they just had, to crash back to earth like that. You've seen that story before.
Sure.
And it's, you know, sometimes the coach gets swept away in something like that. So I think it was important. And South Carolina, another example of, yeah, they were down, but you push the right buttons at quarterback, things can change really quickly.
Yeah, and that's what Auburn's counting on for this year. And sort of leading into one of the things you were talking about, Coach. I mean, Don, the craziness over the last week.
Yeah, I was gone and come back. And
well, I mean, you find out that, you know, you're seeing national reporters talking about their schools that have $50 million sunk into their rosters for this year because of the new revenue sharing. There's only so much money to go around, and it's not going to be anywhere near the money that has been given out to players over the last couple of years.
Right. And then I also heard driving back, you know, listening to a lot, flipping the stations on the talk shows, that the Big 12 coaches said they don't even know the rules now.
Well,
I think that was this week, and I'm thinking, come on, man.
Well, you know what it says, but I mean, you even had NIL go versus Deloitte yesterday. I mean, you've had some clarification trying to be put out there as to here's what we mean. Yeah. So, I mean, you have attorneys and people at individual schools going, well, I think that we can do this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the only thing that one of the few things that we do know for sure is that once July 1st got here, you were supposed to be going by what the new rules are.
It does seem like, you know, at the very least, I don't know, funny business. Like, you know, if they, because, you know, we heard from there was a collective representative yesterday in the AP story who said 100% of collective-led deals were being turned down by the clearinghouse.
Right.
Like, it seems to be, you know, they're taking there's a lot more scrutiny of deals with an entity that has a clear tie to the university, whether it's a group that was set up just to help the university, you know, help student athletes earn money, like the collectives that were legal for a very long time, or individuals or businesses that have longstanding partnerships, even I would think could be. But even those, like, you know, one of the big questions from the Deloitte thing was legitimate business purpose. If you're a private business that wants to sponsor student athletes, there are multiple avenues available for that are legal. But if you are, I guess, if you only exist to direct student athletes to a certain school, it's going to be much harder to sort of get those deals, you know, through the past the goalie than they were for a really long time. Does that seem like a, you know?
I think that's pretty fair. Did you read or hear Hugh Freeze on David Pollack's podcast? He was able to, he went into a little more detail, and I thought Pollack did a good job of sort of asking him and letting him explain a little bit more. I mean, a couple of the things that Hugh Freeze was talking about, he said, one of the things you have to realize is your roster and how confident are you in your current roster. And like we were talking about yesterday, I mean, he said, do you realize that on paper, here's what he said to David Pollack. He said, you realize on paper, I'm not losing a single receiver this year. It's not like the old days where you sign 25 guys and then figure out who your 85 are. He said, this is actually a salary cap world, and I like our receiver room. So how do I go out and make offers to receivers at numbers that these other schools are making? When come January, I want to keep the ones that I have. Mm-hmm. He said, and then he did get a name, and he said, I don't think the Feinbaums of the world or any of them think about that. They just say he's playing golf or something. But he's got – they have to be looking at the numbers that they have invested in the players that they have that they want to keep now before they feel like they can throw out a bigger number at a high school player.
The quote from Adam Cole's story you know, summarizing the podcast, I guess
Seaball Get Ball is Pollock's podcast.
And Adam Cole, you know, quoted a couple of, you know, the excerpts. Quote, I'm going to operate in the manner that our administration has interpreted it. That's what Hugh Freeze said about, you know, about the, about Auburn's recruiting, if you want to call them struggles. Quote, there's a lot of people right now that are operating on a different set of rules than on what their interpretation is of this settlement and how you should operate. I'm going to operate in the manner that our administration has interpreted it. We'll see. I think it's a long game play for us that I think is going to work out in our favor because we're doing it very transparent and the way we believe the settlement is written to operate, unquote. So he sort of thinks that I guess he's got the slow start in the horse race sort of mentality, whereas he's doing it the right way. And you know, you shouldn't necessarily get discouraged by the results because eventually he's going to be the strategy will be proven to be the correct one.
I like there was a quote he said, and this is interesting. He said, "I've sent our general manager to NFL teams to find out, and we know how much percentage goes into a running back room, a quarterback room, a defensive line room. You better be figuring out how in the world come January you retain your defensive lineman that has the experience that I need. If you promised all that already to a freshman, you've got an issue." So, I mean, that's one of the things that they have done. And I can think of a couple of GMs they probably were able to get some pretty good info from. But he says, the biggest thing is the calendar's so messed up, you're asking us to sign a class in December, and I don't even know who my roster is until January. But they're having to try to do that. And as we said, and Jason Caldwell echoed this the other day, it's not for a lack of resources. It's just they feel this is the best way to handle this right now because the most important thing is keeping their current players on the roster and happy and ready to compete this year. Then they'll worry about 26 as 25 is going on. But before 25 gets started, you better be worried about 2025.
Yeah, it's wow. But you're right.
There's so much more that's involved now
yeah.
than used to be yeah. in being a head coach.
Than it was, what?
In coaching.
3 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Or last week, almost. But something just popped about an attorney demanded the NCAA to retract. Something just came up.
We've spent a lot of time sort of on dissecting the strategy as Hugh Freeze and John Cohen have explained it and why they may be right. I feel like the unspoken parts of the story, which Hugh Freeze also talked about a little bit on the Seaball Get Ball podcast, the two things we haven't spent as much time with. One, the idea that Hugh Freeze is playing a lot of golf and it is somehow A, negatively hurting recruiting, or it's an indication that he's checked out and he knows Auburn's about to have a bad season
right.
and he's playing golf instead of working to fix it because he knows he has no future at Auburn. I think that's one of the other one would be Auburn's not recruiting well because the money people have bailed on supporting Hugh Freeze I'll tell you what, if Auburn had struggled to keep the roster together in December.
Oh, yeah.
I would have believed that there was frustration with Hugh Freeze from the people who have their hand on the money faucet, right? Yeah. Decide if it's
well. He did say to David Pollock, he said, "This is a time people are looking for things to write about, and I do love golf. I enjoy playing." But he said, "What people don't realize, I assure you, I never missed a camp day or a recruiting day. But if camp got over at 3 o'clock one day and Jill and I go out at 4:30, we absolutely might do that. I'm not apologizing for that, but my focus is 100% on getting Auburn in that win column."
Yeah, and I mean, no, I think it's felt a little unfair. So I mean, I get why folks want to make a story of it, but I mean, like to me, if we thought that he's playing golf because he knows this thing is like if Auburn looked like they were outmanned in 6 or 7 of the 8 SEC games they were about to play on paper right now and Hugh Freeze spent a lot of this offseason playing golf, right? I think it would be, wow, this thing feels like it's already off course, and it's not headed back on course, and he's not to keep using the word course.
If we heard their big recruiting weekends or their camps, and Hugh Freeze is nowhere to be found, oh, and here's his score from golf today, I'd be more concerned.
And I don't necessarily get the sense that that's what's going on, right? Like, you don't get the – like, and the other one would be from who we talk to, I don't get the sense that it's, the money people have been frustrated and don't.
Well, they're frustrated, but
not like.
He still has the resources.
Right, but and the fact that he was able to keep this roster together.
Right.
You know, I think getting back to.
That could not be done without that support.
Right.
You're absolutely right about that.
And again, guys, winning solves all of this golf stuff.
It's going to feel 4 years away if Auburn's 4-0. I really think so. I think that the talk of Auburn playing.
They want him to play golf.
Like when the 2004 team was 4-0 and nobody wanted to talk about wanting Brandon as the quarterback instead of Jason anymore.
It's crazy business. I'm telling you guys.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're getting to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Again, anything on your mind sports-wise here on the Friday Drive.
Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and we'd love for you to join in. No surprise, Don, seeing the headline that, yes, Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports is writing this afternoon that the House attorneys in that House versus NCAA settlement have slammed the NCAA and power conferences and are threatening to go to court. The attorneys for the plaintiffs in the House settlement say they believe the NCAA and power conferences are violating terms of the legal agreement. In a terse 2-page letter sent to NCAA and power conference officials today, Jeffrey Kessler, a co-lead House plaintiff attorney along with Steve Berman, requested that the NCAA and conferences retract a statement that was made yesterday. Remember, we just talked about there was a guidance yesterday as to what would be acceptable, what would not be acceptable as far as NIL is concerned, and the House attorneys feel like that goes against the agreement. There should be no questioning of any amount that goes to any player.
Right, and there was very little policing of the NIL space when collectives were allowed, right? When collectives sort of had pre-settlement.
And that's the reason that this college sports committee was formed by the Power Conference athletics directors.
Yeah, On3 ran a story earlier today, Adam Luckett did, and I think he had a pretty succinct summary of what Brian Seely is expecting from as far as compliance with the CSC, and it's pretty much like I'll use his words: student athletes must complete a service to get deals approved, unquote. If you're trying to make a deal with a student athlete without that student athlete necessarily
performing a service for some entity,
in exchange, continuing Luckett's words, it eliminates direct pay for play from a collective to a player. A service must be clearly proven to earn the agreed upon financial package. This goes against the previous setup when there was almost zero policing NIL deals with school collectives. The enforcement arm is forcing collectives start making deals with companies so student athletes are participating in true NIL agreements, unquote. Will it hold up in court?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, because the House attorneys have then come back and said there is nothing in the settlement agreement to permit the NCAA or a conference or the college sports committee, the CSC, acting on their behalf to decide that it would not be a valid business purpose for a school's collective to engage in for-profit promotions of goods or services using paid for student athlete NIL. To the extent the NIL payment is for the promotion of a valid business purpose, it's irrelevant whether that payment comes from an NIL collective or any third party. It's going to the athletes.
And if the lawyers are right in this argument, then it would seem like I asked you during the commercial break, If we have this setup, but the clearinghouse can't deny a deal for any amount of money,
then
the
clearinghouse is just completely useless. It's impotent. There's no reason to have it.
If it's this system, but the clearinghouse just rubber stamps every deal, and there's no distinction between direct pay for play and sponsoring a student athlete for their name, image, and likeness, you know, if there's no difference between endorsement and inducement, then it was a lot of talk about what's going to happen in the courts for a settlement that ultimately doesn't matter. Yes, you will have revenue sharing. You will have direct payment from schools to players. But the aspect of controlling the NIL space and taking, you know, some of that out of recruiting, you know, that felt like an important part of all of this.
Yes, if the House attorney, if these attorneys are right, then Auburn is way behind on schools that have been offering, you know, whatever to players, because they'll be able to make that payment if this is the case. I think it's really interesting that you read, this letter that was sent was addressed specifically to the NCAA Council, the organization's lead attorney, and copied were the general counsels of the Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, ACC, and Pac-12. Yeah. Those were the defendants in the case. What I do think is really CSC interesting.
The CSC was created by those entities.
What's great is the NCAA was asked for a comment by Yahoo, and the NCAA said, quote, "They have no role in these decisions. Get comment from the CSC." Yeah. NCAA says, not my case this time.
I mean, it's their settlement. So if you're challenging the settlement on some grounds, then the NCAA is going to be involved. But the fact is, CSC is taking over policing. I mean, as important as any conference commissioner has been in recent memory, it sounds like this fellow who runs the CSC, Brian Seeley, like it sounds like he's as important as anyone. If this thing holds up, you know, he's the sheriff.
Boy, it didn't take long, did it?
No, it did
not take long.
Well, when you're talking about possible antitrust violations,
yeah. Well, you're talking about thousands of athletes that are looking at, hey, wait, they promised me $200,000. You're saying I'm only going to get $20,000? You know, something like that.
Standing in the way of student athletes being able to legally make money without like a real leg to stand on was a big reason why the NCAA found themselves in this mess in the first place. And the fact that, like, you know, I don't know if this is going to ultimately, you know, stand up to the antitrust investigation or the antitrust analysis or whatever. But without it, if collectives can just give whatever they want, and the cap is only for revenue sharing, and everything else is like, if it's still the Wild West.
It's the Wilder West.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a very serious reaction from the conference commissioners, and you could see the steps to employment and collective bargaining.
Oh, yes, I agree.
I think
that would come very very rapidly if this is the case.
And I think you can. I think you can. If, you know, if we're talking about employees, and certainly if you're talking about state employees in these cases, I think you can have a little more control as far as endorsements and
and
the role of collectives if it's not desired in this. So I mean, it would not shocking that we're talking, you know, lawyers, guns, and money. Like it's
All right, let's get to the Drive Hotline before we get to our final break of hour number one. And Yellowhammer is up. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, Hammer.
Hey, afternoon, guys. So. regarding college football, I've been listening to you and other people on your show for the last two or three weeks talking about the chaos, I guess you could say, that exists in college football. We have this whole nother situation where there's this newness, this uncertainty, the unknown, the litigation, the arbitration, to where it's now necessary for every coaching staff to no longer just have, you know, some assistant coaches and a few advisors and some graduate assistants. Now you need this whole other layer of people who can and work through the logic of this, then that, maybe, but what if we do this? And just it's so much gray area and uncertainty, it's chaos.
Yeah, well, I mean, here, just let's see if we can sort of quickly go through the situation. Obviously, players have felt like they deserved a part of the huge revenue that college athletics, specifically football, makes. And so that's where the lawsuit that came from. It was a lawsuit against the NCAA saying the players deserve a portion of the revenue. It is completely, that is not what NIL is. NIL is another matter where players feel like they should, you know, years ago, we were talking about it yesterday, there was a kicker down in Florida that had a YouTube page. Mm-hmm. Where he was putting things on there, and he couldn't make money. The NCAA declared him ineligible because he was able to make money off that. And that doesn't seem fair either. So you've had those two things. And from those two, then with the NCAA unable to really control anything, came the collectives and organizations that were able to amass millions of dollars and use that to induce players to sign with schools. That's always been one of the most egregious things in the eyes of the NCAA, and a lot of schools don't want to know that, hey, we could have gotten this player, but our rival down the road's paying them, you know, X amount of money to get them to come there. But that's where it's gotten to right now, and now we're trying with the agreement. There is going to be revenue sharing, but that is separate from NIL. And the concern right now is, what is valid NIL money? Is it something that is for a business purpose, or is it just how much money you can get to get a player to come play for you?
There's so much variability in the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's plenty of variability from school to school, too, and that's one of the reasons why the conferences and their ADs you know, wanted to try to, you know, put some type of guidelines and reins on this, but I understand, you know, if you're a player, if you're a prospect, hey, you don't want there to be any limit to how much you can get, whether you're doing anything, you know, valid business purpose wise or not.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Just the thinking behind opting into the revenue sharing agreement. I mean, you look at the language that a lot of athletic directors, including John Cohen, used: level playing field. The thought was that by taking the role of collectives away and making NIL a truly endorsement related aspect of college athletics, you were going to take away the collectives that had suddenly turned
that rogue booster that can, you know, yeah. here's another, you know, however many $100,000.
Yes. You know, the thinking that you're taking that role away from college athletics. Mm-hmm. And I think that was expected. Like, I'm surprised it's shocking to some folks that collective related deals are getting rejected by, I mean, maybe the thought was that the clearinghouse was just going to be a sort of a rubber stamp. And if you didn't have a deal that was going to pass the clearinghouse,
boy, you got really bad people writing it up or something.
You'd find other ways to make it work. But like, no, it's not all that shocking that collective deals are getting and it's not, you know, from what we heard from Deloitte, it's not rejected. It's they're getting sent back and
rework this deal or let's see if you can get it more to what should be reasonable.
That is rejected. Well, yeah, no, rejected would generally mean like you don't get another chance to.
Right. This time you get three shots. Yeah. All right. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or two of hour number one of the Friday Drive. Yes, I read through this. I get confused sometimes the more I read of each of these things. I mean, it really appears that this argument is more about the collectives, that the House attorneys feel collectives should still be able to pay players if they are doing something, whether it's on behalf of the collective or for a third party.
Yeah,
I think that's the memo
that the CSC put out. Ross Dellinger has it. We might talk about this a little bit more in hour number two. But the getting into the specifics of what they've done so far, why they haven't cleared certain deals. It's interesting to see. And again, there's the possibility that this thing could get carved up in a court of law. But if it can work as written, it does seem like it could have a huge impact on
it. It could help level the playing field. All right, we will we'll get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done. Love for you to join us here in the final hour of the Friday Drive.
Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Hope everybody doing well on this Friday. Got Drew back at the controls, as usual. And we'd love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. And it's been hard to get away from it this week. I mean, look, we have media days starting Monday, got the All-Star game, got the Home Run Derby All-Star game. Great to hear that Casey Mize has been named as a replacement there and will be in the All-Star game in Atlanta on Tuesday. But it seems like every day there is something else about some of the repercussions from the House versus NCAA settlement.
Well, we thought when the settlement when the settlement was approved in early June after a pretty long wait, we thought there was going to be a really interesting adjustment period.
Oh, yeah.
Where you saw how
we're
are these
still rules, definitely in that.
How are these rules interpreted? Are they going to hold up in court? How could it impact? And I still don't. It's going to be the same. It's not going to impact the upcoming season too much once we get into actual.
Once
football. But I think that the first portal. Right, the first portal under these rules could be really interesting because schools are going to have.
They need to know, what they really have available.
Juggling your budget during the transfer portal is going to be fascinating, right? With players, mm-hmm. Because you don't know who's staying or going, and there's still.
I still don't know the answer to players that are coming that are going to be enrolling in January. Be they from the transfer portal or early signees, is that next year's budget or is it this year's budget?
We talked about the ways you could do this. Like I would think that you're paying your revenue sharing money to the athletes that are playing this season, but you're not going to be able to. The flip side of that is, especially unless everybody's doing that. If that's not the case,
that means there's not as much incentive to enroll in January.
Right.
Well, if you're not getting anything.
Unless you have an inside track to the starting position potentially, which would be the upside. And you're more valuable.
That's right. You could earn your way to a little more.
Or you could negotiate. You could negotiate the money.
Because
you want.
Supposedly the negotiations go on after. After the season.
But if you're in the transfer portal, my thinking would be schools are promising you money, but it's money you get in July when the next year's budget shows up. But that's not.
Ooh, that doesn't sound. That's what I mean. That goes completely against what has been going on for the last couple of years. When players have been getting. Remember, players have been getting lots of money just to visit.
That would work. Yeah. How about this? That would work if everyone did it.
Yeah.
But if there's rare. I mean, but if certain guys. Can get paid in January, then they're, it's going to be real tough for the schools trying to wait until July to pay you the revenue sharing money. And so I think that's probably not the way.
They're not going to be like the old, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, guys.
Yeah,
it's like, you better pay me now.
So no, I would. Yeah. So I would imagine that if you're recruiting guys in December and trying to get them to enroll in January, you're cutting them in on
something
on this year's year's $20.5 million. So I mean, I mean, certainly you can promise them some of it from next year.
Sure,
but they're going to want.
They want something now.
I mean, yeah, they don't want they. You know,
I'm going to come in and work out and go through spring practice and everything for free. No,
Coach,
I don't.
Coach
think so.
Dunn, you think it'd be tough to recruit with post-dated checks? Say, hey, I'm a recruit. This will be good in July. All right, just hold on to it till
hold it.
Yeah, I want you to hold this one.
Yeah, hold it.
I'll tell you to hold
July,
something.
Friend. Yeah. I'll tell you. You can hold something.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, but that's like the guy. While I was gone, did I hear that a guy from Texas Tech got
$5.1 million?
Okay,
it's $1.7 million a year for 3 years, okay. Guaranteed. He says.
So now they're down to $15 million.
So the question
I don't think that's what Texas Tech is thinking.
Right, they're thinking it's,
and that's why the other Big 12 coaches are saying we don't know the rules.
Right, right. Wow.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, I wonder if there's thinking that, like, in that Texas Tech example.
Yeah.
If there's thinking some of that, and it's nebulous. It's not. We don't know the number. Some of that's going to come from. Like if it's 1.8 a year is the
1.7.
average.
1.7.
Okay, if it's 1.7 a year, some of that 1.7 could come from this year's $20.5 million.
Yeah, which would probably, and again, it's $18 million.
Right.
Remember,
right.
Because 2.5 is going to scholarships, so it's.
But it's still 20.5.
Yeah.
Right?
The easiest way to figure it is if a school is going to spend $15 million. On football, and you've got about 100 players, $150,000 would be your average salary. So it'd say, okay, of that $1.7 million, maybe $100,000 to $200,000 would be the most he could get from the revenue sharing. So that means another $1.5 million is supposed to be NIL.
Although potentially you could carve out some space in your $15 million football budget for a couple of high-priority players.
Couple, yeah.
And I don't know
you
how
start, much. You start going much over a quarter of $1 million on one player.
Yeah. No, you don't want.
You're gonna have a tough time.
You don't want to be the guy in the fantasy baseball league paying a quarter of your salary to one guy necessarily.
And you probably don't want to be. I wonder how.
Even if he's Freddie Freeman.
How the chemistry of the team is going to be when they know this guy's getting five times as much as the guy right next to him.
And it's not even on campus yet.
Yeah, that's right.
But wow.
And that's one of the things Hugh Freeze was talking about.
Right.
How am I gonna keep my players that I want to keep?
Yeah.
If you're offering this kind of money to players that haven't even gotten here yet.
I don't know. That's crazy.
Here's the thing about it. The surprise with a three-year deal, too, is, like, what happens if he's a lemon six games in?
Tough.
I wonder. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I just wonder how much.
His NIL value is going to drop like a rock.
Sure.
I mean, if you really had to go by valid, that means more and more of that money is going to be coming from your revenue sharing.
I mean, I haven't necessarily seen the word guaranteed attached to that point.
Okay. Yeah. He said.
Okay.
His agent
entirely
announced that it was guaranteed.
Oh, then I take that back. Then, but what I would, to answer Coach Dunn's question, like, I would think that some of that, if we land on 1.8 a year, 1.7, some of that 1.7 is coming from the revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how much, and I would imagine Texas Tech has people working real hard with corporate sponsors.
Yeah,
Pat Mahomes has his Adidas sort of Jordan brand equivalent that he's trying to get established with different football programs.
Right.
Maybe a player the tackle could be could be one of the centerpieces of the Mahomes sort of, like, maybe they can find
it better be.
I was going to say maybe they can find some NIL space in there and to take the 1.7. But you would think some of it's coming from the revenue sharing money. Like, that's, I mean.
And see, he is rated one of the top 20 to 25 players in the country. How do you think somebody who's in the top 10 is going to say,
number one.
Yeah, now I'm going somewhere for a portion of your revenue sharing?
How about this? I wonder how many five stars out of high school you can sign with that sort of strategy. Like, you know what would be surprising?
Well, you can sign a lot of them with that kind of strategy. I mean, you can sign most of them with a $5.1 million guaranteed deal.
Yeah, but you would you be able to would you, you be able to,
would you be able to live up to it? Probably not.
I was going to say, would you be able to field a team with the rest of your revenue sharing money?
No,
like that's
no.
That's where it would be difficult to. So maybe it's worth it for the right player out of high school. Maybe something like that is worth it. I don't know how.
I'd be very concerned how this is going to sit with his teammates.
The guys on the team. That's my concern. I know that for a fact. Now in basketball, yeah, one or two guys, you can win a national championship. Football, one guy. That's a lot of pressure.
Line of scrimmage too. True freshman at the line of scrimmage, like that's. I mean, you better wow. Look now. There have been tackles who stepped foot on campus. You remember the first time you saw Lee Zimba?
Yeah.
Like there have been some tackles that stepped foot on campus, and you think this guy can start every game right now, and you need to get him on the field ASAP because you don't know how many years
McNeil,
you're going to get. Yeah. That occasionally happens. It's rare.
Yes.
And
but do you throw like would you have given that young man $5 million?
Hey, here's something. I didn't see this. Darren Revelle wrote this when it was announced. When Ojo's agent or Ojo's agent said that it was fully guaranteed. He said fully guaranteed. The agent told him this. Fully guaranteed means he doesn't have to go to class. He doesn't have to practice. He's simply paid to wear the school's uniform.
That's a wild. Wow. That's a wild. Who's this fella?
The agent's name.
Some guy on Twitter. Some guy on social media. That's like something I would say.
I'm trying to find. Where is the agent's?
Good.
You know, Texas Tech's got to be like, he does have to go to class.
Yeah.
By the way, P.S.
He does. Derek Shelby of Prestige Management.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty sweet deal if you can get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no but kidding. You don't have to do anything. Just wear the uniform.
I was under the impression that you did have to. You did have to continue to stay academically eligible.
That's crazy.
In this sort
of, yeah. Man. All right. We're just.
That doesn't, you know what? That quote doesn't make me think it's more guaranteed. That quote makes me hope that someone else saw the deal before.
Wow. Well, that just tells you that what was the fella's name from Texas Tech that was making the rounds at the Big 12 Media Days, the billionaire? That he has probably put in writing, it's guaranteed. I'm guaranteeing that he's going to get that money.
Wow.
I mean, the power of the clearinghouse is certainly going to be tested as far as making sure NIL deals are legit. But if this is all above board, as we understand the rules, then yeah, there could be eye popping, and this guy's going to be on every billboard in Texas.
In order to justify
the NIL deal, right? Like you just put him on. I mean, look, we drove to Dallas last year for media days. There are a lot of billboards in Texas. Like you can
just buy some national ads during ESPN broadcast.
You might see this guy as you'd almost have to mount a national ad campaign around him to.
Hi, I'm Felix. Everybody's gonna it's like, yeah, my goodness. All right, we're just getting underway here in hour number two. We'll actually talk maybe a little bit about the media days, the All-Star game, and more, but we'd love for you to join in, whatever you want to talk about, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email TheDrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Don with Drew at the controls. Sounds like we ought to be either plug it in the guitars, get ready to build Dan and Don.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound like your folk trio or something?
You probably heard us on the King Biscuit Flower Hour, I would imagine, something like that.
It's not quite Grand Funk was Mark, Don, and Mel.
Yeah.
You weren't part of that. You weren't the Don. No.
We do a mean Puff the Magic Dragon cover, So is there anyone from, we talked about this a little bit. Are there coaches or players you're really excited to hear from next week or you're interested to hear sort of, you know, as they – we landed on Brian Kelly a little bit. We talked about this.
Yeah.
I think that's one where
– I wonder if the SEC coaches will pretty much be on the same page or if they'll want to just sort of avoid the subject of talking about what we've been talking about here the last week.
Even before recruiting became a story this summer, I think Freeze was one of the more interesting guys to hear from because, I mean, right there with Stoops and yep. I guess Sam Pittman, as far as coaches who probably cannot absorb another season where they're pretty significantly under 500 in conference play.
You know,
Jeff Lebby needs to win a game, probably.
He does. And you know what? Brent Venables, the expectations are there that boy, Oklahoma's back. They need to be.
Yeah.
They don't need to slide back to a sub 500
year. And you know what? And the coast isn't clear for Billy Napier.
No,
but, you're right.
Like, you know, I mean, that's still Florida.
Need to show that down the stretch last year is what they're going to be.
How about this? Could things turn? Like I said this when it happened. If Nico's good in Los Angeles and they feel like they're missing a quarterback at Tennessee, this thing's going to feel like it was mishandled by Josh Heupel. And I wonder if he's been bulletproof for the most part, deservedly so, considering the job he's done there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's gotten good quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like we say it all the time, Bill, this thing turns usually when you're if smooth sailing can hit an iceberg or a rock when you miss at the quarterback position. Like you go get a new guy and you think that's the answer and that's what makes Bruce Pearl being able to absorb the Pegues thing this past year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So much like Auburn went and got who they thought was going to be the point guard, didn't work out. They still went to the Final Four. Usually when you go get who you think is going to be the quarterback, it's a big hype. You're shopping at the top of the market. If it doesn't work with that guy, it's tough to, you know, it's tough to keep everything mm-hmm. on track and you know, keep the ride from getting too turbulent, too bumpy. I want to see how Tennessee absorbs, you know, a quarterback deciding pretty late in the game,
late in the game.
Yeah. That, like their returning starter and a guy that I think a lot of folks thought was going to be in the upper echelon of SEC quarterbacks this year.
Well, I mean,
I know the numbers weren't overwhelming, but he was a redshirt freshman.
I know. But, I mean, that sort of gets to one of the things that Freeze was talking about. I mean, if you really have to be concerned with the salary cap, there's only so much that revenue sharing can do for it. So,
well, Tennessee had to be worried about the salary cap. Tennessee also had to be worried about if a quarterback or anyone on the team can say that late in the game, hey, let's renegotiate or I'm gone.
That's it.
What kind of precedent do you send if you cave? But what happens if you ended up really needing him?
Well,
like, that's a double-edged sword.
But I think a lot of Tennessee fans would still have his back and go, yeah, well, we would have been better with him, but we would have been a better team with him. But you can't let that kind of thing happen.
So I think
he's got some leeway because of that.
I think you're absolutely right, except it's tough to watch your team struggle without a quarterback.
Oh,
and I wonder, you know, if
they've got a legit reason as to why.
And they if they do. And they haven't needed to be patient with Heupel at all. Right.
No.
Like
he's
seemingly been, you know, he's had the good since he got there. I don't know. Like it would if they're suddenly looking for answers at the quarterback position, that's a different situation than they've been in pretty much since he arrived.
334-321-1390, that's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Uncle Ollie is up first. Hey, Uncle.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. Glad it's Friday.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Hey, listen, I was listening, you know, about the house lawyers and all this, and of course it sounds like, again, Auburn is going to get screwed trying to do the right thing. I promise you that's how it's going to turn out. So it's you know, history repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember back in the day with all the Adidas investigation, Chuck Person loses his job. Auburn decides we're going to make sure we're on top of all this. So we suspend Jabari Smith and Daniel Purifoy. Purifoy loses a whole year. Auburn gets 4 years probation. In the meantime, Bill Self gets four games that he doesn't get to coach.
I think you said Jabari. I think you said Jabari was suspended there. I think it was Austin that missed the year.
Yeah, that's right. It was Austin and Daniel.
That's right. I'm sorry.
Austin, I got you. I just wanted to throw you off course or anything. But I do think your point about folks thinking that Auburn sort of over punished in the aftermath of the FBI scandal compared to Louisville or Kansas or LSU as far as the cautious approach, and that's a word we've heard, Bill. That's a word we've heard people talking about. The approach Auburn is taking post settlement.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's Auburn has been through history. Auburn's been one that has gone ahead and thrown themselves on the sword, or said, "Yes, we're going to do whatever we can to be proactive." And other schools have fought it, and Auburn's been penalized more.
I agree, and you look at that same time frame. Sean Miller at Arizona, he has the number one player taken in the NBA draft, Aiken. The dude plays all year. He was caught up in that whole scandal. They didn't take him off the court. He played the entire year.
Oh, you think Will Wade didn't sit anybody, right? Like Will Wade exactly. Will Wade was playing a lot of the guys that were the ones that he landed were absolutely out there on the floor.
So after a while, you got to think our approach is not correct. The best thing to do is bend the rules and fight it. I mean, that's what everybody else is doing.
I see what you're saying.
Lawyers, and you know, it just seems like we always play by the rules and we always get screwed. And it's so frustrating as an Auburn fan.
Yeah, and seeing this the action by the House attorneys today is not a great look as far as Auburn's concerned. Look, as we were saying a couple of days ago, Auburn would have the resources to come back and match some offers, but you're still playing from way behind, and on top of that, you need to win.
And I want to point out too, Bill, like the actions from the House lawyers today don't change the fact that practically every collective related deal, and the other piece of language in that CSC memo was, listen to this, Uncle Ollie. The CSC also said we're not clearing deals if we ask a school for more information and we don't get a response. So those schools that were states that have passed laws saying don't comply with these sort of investigations into NIL and things like that. Like the CSC's response is at the moment there is still a system that's rejecting NIL deals that don't seem like they're above board. Now, could those rejected deals end up going through anyway? Yes, but right now I can understand a cautious approach in the NIL space because you don't know if you overpromise and it doesn't go through, then you could be you could be back at square one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been a TUF donor since 1989, back when it was Greater Auburn Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I get 10 tickets to every game. And I'll be honest with you, it's slowly approaching the point that I'm going to pull away from all that and start sinking whatever resources I have into baseball, because it seems like it's more of a student-athlete sport. I realize there's some NIL, and I realize there's some transfer stuff, but it still seems to be a little more like college athletic.
Relatable to college kids, yeah. I understand exactly what you're saying.
You've talked about Ike Iris. I mean, this is a kid that we've all grown to love, and all these guys, these four freshmen last year, and it just seems like more of a pure, like, you know what, I came here because I want to play for Auburn and I'm going to stay. And again, I know NIL plays a role in it, but it doesn't seem to be as cutthroat.
No, you're right. Football
has become.
Oh, and the market, you know, not having any restrictions the last couple of years, like, I think you could understand a football player taking a mercenary approach. But I think it's really commendable in any college sport when a guy who had the opportunity to be just make himself available to the highest bidder, regardless of practically anything else, when guys maybe decided to value loyalty and quality of life at home and building a legacy at a school. Look, Ike Irish, Bill, if he had gone into the portal after last season, if he'd played 2 years at Auburn and gone to the portal, the market for Ike Irish
Through the roof.
Would have been through the roof.
Absolutely.
And he probably could have gone to places that were preseason.
He probably would have stayed in the Southeastern Conference. Well, but I mean,
and he probably could have gone somewhere that was closer to being the preseason SEC champion or something. And for him not to do that is highly commendable.
Yeah, and you say that, and I remember reading an article where they asked Ike, why didn't you take some of these opportunities? He said, because I was meant to be at Auburn. That just doesn't happen anymore.
No, not in most. You're right. Not you don't hear as much of that in football or basketball.
Yeah, it turns. He could have said because I'm going to go top five in the draft in 2025, and the money will take care of itself. But I don't know if you heard about that, Uncle. Yeah, we said early on, like, projected third overall according to CBS in a new draft earlier today.
And I so hope that's right because if anybody deserves it, he does because he is just a good kid. Anyway, always good to talk with you. Y'all be good.
All right, take care. Take care, Uncle Ollie. Yeah, I saw MLB today updated their projections. They've got him 11 to the A's.
Top half of the first round. You know,
I've also heard he could go to the Reds, who I think have the 9 pick.
Yeah, I'd seen him sort of creeping closer and closer to the top 10. Three was a big jump.
Yeah, no kidding.
But you know what? If you think there's going to be a big market for the catchers, especially the ones that can jump to the major league soon, I get why Ike Irish would be on your list.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. We'll go ahead and get to that break. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline. Come on in and join us in the final half hour.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Friday. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and let's get to The Drive Hotline. And Philly Fanatic is up next.
Hey, how's it going, boys?
Good.
Yeah,
how are you?
I'm at the lake where it's on and off again thunderstorm. Get your boat out and then you got to take it back in.
Yeah.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
Now it's time for all good Auburn fans to pony up the money. Season tickets for football, season tickets for basketball, and not too long down the road is baseball.
Yeah, basketball season tickets are due, I believe, at the end of the month, right? By the end of the month?
Yeah. That's right. The good news is they haven't hurt the faculty and staff too much about it. We haven't had a big increase in quite a while, so I guess they realize we don't have that kind of money.
I'm sure that's the reason.
They're sending some guys to the lake right now to shake you upside down.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm down the road from Coach Pearl, but my house is one decimal point less than what he paid for his. So
I feel
too bad about that. Yeah, I wanted to talk really about contracts again. I guess that's what everybody else is talking about. So it seems like Texas Tech and other schools are getting into the Tony contract where you – promise money over a certain number of years. So we'll see how that holds up. But I could see, and where's that money going to come from? Is it going to come from 1 year? Or that's a real conundrum. So I don't really know what's going to go on.
Yeah, is it going to be? I hadn't thought about that. What if it's a backloaded deal that he'll get it all after 3 years?
I'd
be enticed by a deal that would tell me they'd pay me that if I stuck around for 3 years.
I do wonder if there's a way out for either party after 1 year. If they decide, if he wants to go play somewhere else, or if Texas Tech decides they don't want to keep him around, or if the coach leaves, or once you start talking about players having signed away eligibility, right? Future. I mean, that's sort of what we ran into with the Wisconsin player who dropped out and went to Miami, and, mm-hmm. and Wisconsin was saying he'd signed away, you know, his future rights or whatever. Like, that's still, once you're talking about multi-year stuff, right? It's like, we'll see. We'll see. But you know what? Fully guaranteed means fully guaranteed, Bill. Like, that's
yep.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about Irish. How about the golfer Corbin, who made a bunch of money in John Deere, and he can't take a penny, and he's coming back to, I guess, get a degree from Auburn. Now that's amazing.
Right, and he's got the option to. He's also going to do pretty well for himself in the NIL space, just because he's near the top of his sport, in a sport where endorsements can be pretty valuable.
Yeah.
And he's also got the avenue to turn pro the moment he wants to. Jackson's, you know, just got, the sky's the limit for Jackson. It's going to be great to see him come back and play one more year. He's a, you know, having a historic career at Auburn, and could be a pro for a long time.
I think he's playing in a tournament this week. One thing about golf is that he as long as you can swing a club, you can make money into your 70s. You know, you go on
the
tour and you just keep making money. Whereas obviously a football player is probably good. Pro ball, what's about 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, more sports need champions tours. You know, I want, you know, more sports need to you know, give.
I don't know that I want to watch a bunch of geriatrics playing, trying to play football. It's bad enough when you watch some of those celebrity softball games.
Oh,
and,
Bill!
And I feel for the guys that can't run any better than I can now.
A fifty and up league for ex major leaguers, and we could have a Greystone Champions League. You could have a version of it. It'd be fantastic. But my dad's joke is that they would have, you know, you could have a champions NASCAR, but they'd all be driving with their blinker on all the time.
Well, I don't doubt we'll see a senior league in pickleball now, because in the tournament
they
have in the local area, I think if you're a senior in a special group, but I don't know that it makes much money. But soon it will be. You know, all these professional athletes are buying pickleball teams. It's unbelievable. It's just like, wow, just, the sport is gone so incredibly fast.
Oh, no kidding.
Hey, Philly Fanatic, you want the Phils to make a move before the deadline?
Yeah, I don't know. They got three pitchers. Bill should know this more than I do. With ERAs down below 1.5.
Suarez has been fantastic. Wheeler might be the NL Cy Young Award winner.
Who's the other? Sanchez?
Sanchez, probably the other one who's pitching really well. And then they've got Painter, who is in the bullpen.
He will be in the rotation before too long.
Maybe the best pitching prospect in the National League is in the Phillies organization, or the next top pitching prospect to come up, if he's not included in a deal, which it would take a lot to get Painter.
What do they need? What do they really need?
Yeah, I wonder.
Maybe an outfielder.
Maybe a closer.
Yeah, bullpen. I mean, they needed Alvarado. They Romano sure hadn't been the guy.
David Bednar. Potentially?
I would think Bednar wouldn't be a bad addition.
Yeah, maybe the Braves make a trade because they need some pitching.
Yeah,
they need a lot of
the Braves may be making more outgoing moves than we thought a month or so ago. Yeah.
Great stuff, Philly Fanatic. Yeah. And I would think
hearing from you.
Have a great weekend. I would think the Braves, talked about this before with Fergie. I would think the Braves, if they're looking to sell, I know Ozzie's been mentioned, but I just don't know. I don't know what trade makes sense right now for Ozzie Albies, because a team.
His value is lower right now than it's been.
Unless the Braves took in return.
Since he signed.
I mean, maybe the Braves took someone with diminished value in return, right? If it was like a dinged up prospect swap or something, and the Braves saw someone that could, you know, had a bigger long-term outlook than Ozzie. But I would think that Ozuna, if he can get healthy and produce, and there's someone who wants him. Let's talk about Seattle. You know, if Iglesias pitched well between now and the deadline, he's on an expiring.
Yeah,
like they could maybe get something for Rizal, but doesn't seem like there are a ton of guys who make sense as sell.
They've
candidates.
Got too many guys that have too much time left that should have too much good time,
and they need left. To be, and they can't punt on any amount of time, because the Acuna contract is up in 2028,
mm-hmm.
and you need to be. Like, you know, you need to present in 2026 and the first half of 2027, you need to look like a team that can win the championship. Otherwise, you probably need to trade. You probably need to trade Acuna at the deadline in 27 and get as much as you possibly can for him in preparation for him leaving. Now, if that's a championship window, you don't trade Acuna and you ride it out.
And you know, we're coming up. We're less than 3 weeks away from the trading deadline here at the All-Star break. Going to be interesting to see. I mean, you may hear some of the buzz there in Atlanta just around talk of players being moved. That's one thing. You usually don't see a lot of deals this early, but I think it's a wise move if you can make one. You can jump in there and make a move before the last minute.
You think a big name gets traded between now and the deadline? You got a name.
I'm sure there will. I haven't really thought about who the biggest name
Suarez
would be traded. Yeah, is he a big name?
I mean, he's a very good third baseman.
He's well known, yeah. And he's one of the better power hitting third basemen in baseball.
Arenado.
Arenado's a bigger name who is probably on the downside and not as you would think, doesn't have as high a ceiling as Suarez.
Bregman
is a guy that is.
He's got an opt out.
There's been some talk. Yeah, there's been some talk about that. Well, we're on third baseman right now, and there are quite a few teams that could use a third baseman.
And there was already a massive trade this season with a third baseman,
yep.
with Devers getting sent from Boston to San Francisco. But not yet. Just
be pretty funny if the guy that they signed to and didn't without telling Rafael he was moving off third base gets traded as well.
George Brett potentially could be on the move, right? Chipper. Pendleton, a lot of these, you know, those are third basemen from the past, but no, it could be a pretty busy next 3 weeks as far as teams.
I always look forward to it. Seems like a lot of the times you look forward to it, you think there are going to be tons of big moves, and there aren't. But
last year it felt like there were some moves
last year.
Jazz Chisholm last year, you know, among other big names that got dealt.
Yeah, so All-Star game coming up on Tuesday night. We talked about Ferg going. Are you trying to figure a way to get over there?
I think that it's going to be 7 o'clock Eastern.
What about the Derby?
But by the time I get off the air, it's going to be 7 o'clock Eastern. I think it's going to be tough for me to make it to Truist from
in an hour.
Yeah, I mean by then it would be.
Just think though. I mean, I was thinking more. I thought, you know, I would love. I mean, look, I'd love to be at the All-Star game, but I'd really love to be able to be at the home run.
If it were closer to the hotel.
Man, you're in town. Yeah, you're in it. You're in downtown. Yeah, I mean, far. All like, you got to get just Truist, the Buckhead. I mean, come on.
Truist from the Hall of Fame. I don't know. I mean, we're taking the station vehicle. I'm probably gonna skip it.
I think it would. I think it would be cool. Of course, one thing. It's not gonna be cool. It's gonna be hot.
I would.
But I mean, it would be great. To just see now
of the two, I would much rather go to the All-Star game than the Home Run Derby
this year.
Given the option between them.
I'm not overwhelmed by the Home Run Derby participants this year.
If I had a favorite, player,
I like some of the bigger names. I mean, Acuna being in it is great there in Atlanta.
Yeah, if I had a favorite player,
and I wish there were four National Leaguers and four American Leaguers in it too.
If I had a rooting interest in it, but like I feel like at the Home Run Derby, I'd be ready to go home after 15, 20 minutes. It's like, all right, they hit a bunch of home runs. That's great. I couldn't tell you who won last year's. The All-Star game could be like that. That's something where
thank goodness, on
top of the fact that it's also
determining home field for the World Series.
Yeah, and it's also on top of the fact that it's like the number of players you get to see, the fact that it's still a competitive baseball game. Like to me, between the two, like it'd be cool to go to either, but given the option between the two, I would be far more interested in going to Tuesday night's All-Star game, and maybe someday, but probably. I mean, the media days folks, and you know this too, Bill, they put on some pretty nice shindigs on Monday and Tuesday night, and that's been a lot of fun to be able to watch the festivities. I think they're renting out a couple of sports bars in downtown Atlanta for Monday night, and it's like the Peach Bowl's doing it one night, and I think we're going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium one of the nights as well. So there's some cool stuff on the schedule, even if I'm skipping the, and again, the logistics of trying to, I think, even in Atlanta, I think the logistics of trying to stop doing the show at 6 and get over there, I feel like I'd miss a big chunk of the festivities and I'd be.
Yeah, you probably would. Yeah, I mean, it's too bad.
And I'm not skipping out early you know, of our media days coverage just to get to the All-Star Game or the Home Run Derby. Owe it to the listeners to do everything I can out there at media days. Media days coverage brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, Wisdom Law Firm, Apex Pest Solutions, and University Ace Hardware. Cannot wait for next week when we take over Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. I mean, it's been 1,500 to 2,000 or so media participants. I would expect it'll be probably the same, if not more, again this year, because there are more outlets and things that seem to pop up all the time. So I would expect that. Look, I'm not going this time. I mean, there are a couple of reasons I can't get around right now, as well as I would like. But honestly, I mean, yeah, I'll miss seeing some folks that you don't get to see very often. But I've been to 30 or so of these, so I feel like I got a pretty good idea. Hopefully there's some news. I mean, that's the best thing. And not every year, but when there is, it's usually early on.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this. I don't remember if we were talking about it or somebody else was. Do you think we'll hear something about a 9-game conference schedule?
No, we've raised that question earlier in the week that this feels like it would be.
This is when you should announce it if you're going to go to it.
But is the SEC alone in that decision, or is the understanding that everyone's going to play 9 and maybe everyone in the power conference is going to play 10 games against major conference opposition?
Well, the SEC is the only one that's not playing 9 right now, though.
Right. I mean, I think that. Well, you've had conferences talk about, are we going to keep playing 9 if there's not rules?
Well, if the SEC's not playing 9, why should we? That's what you're hearing other conferences.
And you're hearing the other side of that negotiation, too, that, well, if that's like, this is all tied to the playoff format. This is all tied to how many and in what order. Yeah,
how many spots do we have? Right.
Right.
So
the commissioner, he starts out. I think.
Yeah, he is first thing Monday morning.
State of the Union.
And that is I'm the most interested in right now, because he has more that he can answer. Yes. He can answer some of the doesn't mean that he will, but there's more that he can answer than anybody else who's going to be there can.
And I always look forward to Commissioner Sankey's the opening remarks are always fun, and then he usually gets some pretty good questions in the big room, and he's willing
he'll get questions about the latest concerts he's been to.
And he's willing to talk to pretty much anyone.
Now, he
and
will.
Answer
that is,
a lot
that
of
is
questions.
True.
I really enjoy the time we're going to get with the commissioner on Monday.
Yeah, so that is just the start. Who all is on tap on Monday?
Vanderbilt, Vandy, LSU, Ole Miss, and somebody else. South Carolina, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, yeah. I think that's right.
Vandy's the only Auburn opponent of the four on Monday.
But you've got Lane. You've got Shane.
You got Kelly. You got
so
Brian.
I mean,
you've got
Pavia.
Great characters.
You've got some entertaining folks.
Yeah, Lane, Lane will stir it up.
Sure,
Shane will too.
I know.
I mean, that Vanderbilt quarterback is a chesty young man too. So I think there's should be a lot of fun on Monday.
He's what, 42 years old now?
I dig it. Yeah.
Hey, he won. I mean, he got his chance to come back. He wants
credit.
To compete.
I don't want to play him.
Yep, got to one more time.
I know.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Friday Drive.
If you're looking for your next great meal and